First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, letting go, oh God, letting go, oh God.
And that is Letting Go of God by Jill Sobule. That's S-O-B-U-L-E. My name is Larry Rhodes. This is the Free Thought Radio Hour. Happy to be with you tonight. We'll be talking about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. Conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. Despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are a lot of atheist songs, and you will hear them on this program. I'll also talk about the atheist and rational groups that exist here in Knoxville and how you can connect with them. Excuse me. Did you know there's also an atheist call-in TV show? It's been going on for over 5 years. A few people have heard of it. It's called Free Thought Forum TV. It's on Tuesday nights between 5 and 6. And then after the show, the hosts and other atheists that are affiliated with it go down to Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria in the Old City and get together for food, drink, and conversation and camaraderie and just good rational conversation. Tonight, we're going to be talking about miracles and memories. I've written a couple of articles about this on my website, and I'll be reading from them. The website is digitalfreethought.com. Click on the blog, and it will take you to the articles that I'm reading from. I have recently, this past year, put out a book of all these articles called Atheism, What's It All About? And you can find that in the usual sources written by me, Doubter 5, or more formally, Larry S. Rhodes. I'll start off with a story. It was in 1932 in a small farming town in West Tennessee, and the midsummer Sunday was typically hot and humid. The after-church crowd gathered at the creek behind the church cemetery to chat in the shade of several ancient oak trees. 8-year-old Melba had gotten permission from her parents to shed her frock that she wore to church and join the other children in a dip in the creek. Ever eager for a swim, she was one of the first children poised on the bank, ready to plunge into the cool, inviting water. Excuse me. As her playmate, playmate Joan came up behind her, they held hands and jumped out as far as they could over the placid water before splashing down into the welcoming embrace of the stream. Landing hard, they splashed the other children on the bank who were still struggling to divest themselves of their church raiment. The water was so refreshing and so invigorating that Melba felt that she would never want to come out again. But it was just at that moment when the cramp hit, a strong cramp in her right leg, and she tried to fight the pain and struggle to the surface, but it seemed to her that she was 100 feet down instead of the 3 or 4 that she probably was. Finally, after a seeming eternity, she broke the surface and felt air enter her lungs. But she could not maintain her position on the surface for more than a second or two before she slipped back under the water again. Struggling to the surface again, she got a glimpse of the creek bank, which was still much farther away than she thought it was, and she lost hope of ever reaching it without the use of her right leg. She slipped under again, but this time in her flailing, her left foot happened to brush against something firm and solid. She noticed it. She touched it again, and this time her foot managed to settle strongly onto it. And as she pushed, she found that her mouth and nose broke the surface and stayed there above water. Others had come by this time, and threw her a piece of clothing that she could grasp and pull herself to shore with. When finally she was out of the water and safe, she found enough air to relate her story of the underwater branch and how lucky it was that her foot had hit it. The preacher told her that that was no accident, and that indeed there were no accidents. It was obvious that Jesus had guided her foot to that branch. It only made sense. And, of course, it made sense to everybody there. And in no time, Melba was relating that story just so. It was no accident that her foot found that branch. It was Jesus intervening and saving her to do his work. Later in life, Melba would claim adamantly that she witnessed, nay, participated in, a miracle, a real life-changing miracle. But did she really? She was raised to believe that an invisible, omnipotent guardian angel, Jesus, was watching over her every moment. Also, her entire childhood was filled with images and stories of this angel helping people, both in the Bible and from personal stories like this one told to her by every person of authority in her life. Then, when her subconscious mind was idle and in her dreams, she must have replayed this scene 1,000 times. And each time Jesus was more real and more vivid until at last she totally forgot that it was the preacher who had suggested it to her at all. It was her memory, and it confirmed it in every detail. She would go on to relate this to everyone who asked her about it. She was now a witness for Christ. She, with a critically timed suggestion from the preacher, had constructed a false memory that was even more real and vivid than the real memories of her childhood. Melba was my mother, and this story always used to give me such a strong emotional tug as a child. But now I realize what it actually was. It was society embedding supernatural beliefs into a small mind, so strongly so that with a little prodding, it would become as real as any memory. It actually did become a memory and a miracle to her. In the Time magazine article, remember that? No, you didn't. Tara Thean, that's T-H-E-A-N, says that even people with extraordinary memories sometimes make things up without realizing it. She goes on to say, the phenomenon of false memories is common to everybody. The party you're certain that you attended in high school, say, when you were actually home with the flu. But so many people have told you about it over the years that it made its way into your own memory cache. False memories can sometimes be a mere curiosity, but other times they can have real implications. Innocent people have gone to jail when well-intentioned eyewitnesses testify to events that actually unfolded in an entirely different way. In her book, My Lie, Meredith Moran writes about the McMartin preschool trial, where she and many other children underwent similar false memory constructions with much less benign results. In this trial, many children had to defend themselves against false memories that had been unintentionally implanted into many preschoolers' minds by well-meaning psychologists who were simply asking questions about the possible sexual abuse at home. On the dust jacket of her book, she writes, her publisher writes, Meredith Moran lived a daughter's nightmare. She accused her father of sexual abuse and then realized nearly too late that he was innocent. During the 1980s and 90s, tens of thousands of Americans became convinced that they had repressed memories of childhood sexual abuse and then decades later recovered those memories in therapy. Journalist, mother, and daughter, Meredith Moran was one of those. Her accusation and estrangement from her father caused her sons to grow up without their only grandfather, divided her family into those who believed her and those who didn't, and led her to isolate herself on planet incest, quote, end quote, where survivors devoted their lives, life savings to recovering memories of events that never occurred. To learn more about false memories, please read scientific article Creating False Memories by Elizabeth F. Loftus, that's L-O-F-T-U-S. So the next time you hear someone swear to have experienced a memory, ask yourself which is more likely, that the laws of the universe were broken or circumvented, or that the person misinterpreted an event, and then wishful thinking and false memories allowed them to create a story that they love to tell in support of their pre-existing beliefs. That was my article, Miracles and False Memories. Like I said, you can find it on digitalfreethought.com. I'm going to continue with this subject, false memories and miracles, and also talk about miracles themselves and what David Hume had to say about it 300 years ago. He sussed it out pretty well. In the meantime, I'm going to take a little break and play a song here for you, if I can find it. And should have found it earlier, I guess. Well, here's Iris DeMent with Let the Mystery Be. Yes, it's all a mystery. Sometimes it's a big mystery. But there's no reason to go around saying that you have answers when you really don't. And here's Iris DeMent. Okay, getting on with our subject of miracles and memories, David Hume, 250 years ago, at least one person knew about miracles and what they could not be taken at face value. David Hume, 1711 to 1776, was a Scottish philosopher, historian, and economist. An essayist, he was one of the most important figures in the history of the Western philosophy and Scottish Enlightenment. In An Inquiry Concerning Human Understanding, written in 1748, Hume makes the argument that you have to give unreasonable amounts of credulity and credibility to the person who relates a miracle claim. That is, we cannot believe miracle claims because it would give more plausibility to an event that required suspension of physical laws than it would that someone would either willingly or mistakenly distort the truth. For example, Christopher Hitchens often makes the case that in order to believe the story of the virgin birth of Jesus, you would have to give more credence to the claim that God impregnated a young woman and that she, while still a virgin, gave birth to a different version of that same God. We have to give more credibility to that story.
The spot of magic, mystic oral energy. One day I just had to ask her, Laura, make it clear. How's it all supposed to work? Please tell me, I'm all ears. How's an aura get created? Tell me, how's it generated? Is there a hypothesis for how an aura can exist? Maybe you're just having mood swings, which you blame on magic move things. That's the last time Laura talked to me. It's always such a drag to be the skeptic in the room. I state my case and watch the room go silent as a tomb. Cause I'm the one who always says, how's that supposed to work? Which makes me end up sounding like an overbearing jerk. Yes, it's a drag to always be the lonely skeptic in the room. I have to speak my mind when pseudoscience starts to bloom. Although I try to hold my tongue, I just can't make it quit. Cause people sure believe some crazy shit. My friend Dennis, he's a scholar. His tech skills are named top dollar. Just a few short years ago, Dennis saw a UFO. Now he says they're all around us, aliens, in fact, surround us. Probably they're living right next door. I say, Dennis, tell me, buddy, help me understand. How can there be flying saucers buzzing round the land? How come every single sighting seems to come in lousy lighting? I could sure accept the truth with valid photographic proof. When you saw those lights a-blinking, had you maybe just been drinking? Dennis doesn't call me anymore. It's always such a drag to be the skeptic in the room. I state my case and watch the room go silent as a tomb. Cause I'm the one who always says, how's that supposed to work? Which makes me end up sounding like an overbearing jerk. Yes, it's a drag to always be the lonely skeptic in the room. I have to speak my mind when pseudoscience starts to bloom. Although I try to hold my tongue, I just can't make it quit. Cause people sure believe some crazy shit. Britney, she's a modern lady, rather green and quite new agey. Claims her latest malady was cured by homeopathy. She says it has magic rules. You take some wholesome molecules, dissolve them in the purest H2O. Britney took this grand concoction and her pain was fixed. Come again, I had to say just what was in that mix. If it works well, what would then be? Water has selective memory, knows the good but not the shit that ever was dissolved in it. Thanks to science, here's what we know, really. It's a big placebo. Britney told me just where I could go. It's always such a drag to be the skeptic in the room. I state my case and watch the room go silent as a tomb. Cause I'm the one who always says, how's that supposed to work? Which makes me end up sounding like an overbearing jerk. Yes, it's a drag to always be the lonely skeptic in the room. I have to speak my mind when pseudoscience starts to bloom. Although I try to hold my tongue, I just can't make it quit. Cause people sure believe some crazy shit. I have a friend, no doubting Thomas, quite devout and really honest. Says despite what we've been told, the earth is really not that old. He will book no wiser, wherefore says her holy books are there. For earth was born 6,000 years ago. To contradict you, Thomas, I admit to feeling grief. But maybe there's some evidence to counter your belief. Like chemistry, biology, astronomy, anatomy, astrophysics, botany, geology, zoology, molecular biology, physics, physiology. Thomas says someone they'll burn in hell. It's always such a drag to be the skeptic in the room. I state my case and watch the room go silent as a tomb, cause I'm the one who always said, how's that supposed to work? Which makes me end up sounding like an overbearing jerk. Yes, it's a drag to always be the lonely skeptic in the room. I have to speak my mind when pseudoscience starts to bloom. Although I try to hold my tongue, I just can't make it quit. Cause people sure believe some scary shit. My young neighbors, Dave and Tina, talked about how they had seen a former Playboy pinup queen speaking out against vaccines. Now they think it's realistic so that no one grows autistic not to vaccinate their little kids. Dave, please listen now before it really is too late. Don't take health advice from one to whom you used to masturbate. Beauty queens have certain assets, science really ain't their strong set. You should get a good assist from a working scientist. Guys, I won't speak gingerly, because this could cause great injury. The right thing is what Dave and Tina did. So it's not always such a drag to be the skeptic in the room. Sometimes I state my case and find that people will consume. Though I'm the one who always says, how's that supposed to work? It doesn't have to mean that I'm an overbearing jerk. No, it's not bad to always be the lonely skeptic in the room. But I'll still speak my mind when pseudoscience starts to bloom. Although I try to hold my tongue, I know I'll never quit. People do believe, and man, do they believe? Yes, people do believe some crazy shit.
And that was Skeptic in the Room by Eddie Scott. Had to beep a few words there, but they weren't really bad words. This is Doubter 5. This is the Free Thought Radio Hour, brought to you by 103.9 Community Radio, Low Power FM in Knoxville, Tennessee. You can listen to us in the local area. We're not very strong as radio station airwaves go. You can hear us downtown pretty well, and as farther you get away from town, the less you can hear it. But we are streaming live online, so you can hear us literally all around the world. Go to Wozo Radio, that's WOZORadio.com. And click on the listen button. Yes, I was going to talk about the free thought groups here in Knoxville. The first, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded back in 2002. Has lots of current members and lots of people on the mailing list. If you count them all up, probably got nearly 600 people. You can find it online. You can join them at the meetup in the Old City. They meet for happy hour and food every Tuesday at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Everybody is welcome as long as you don't preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Matt Dillahunty. Then there's the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for almost 20 years. RET has a biweekly presentation and discussion at the Pellissippi State campus near Hardin Valley Road. They're meeting this morning. They had a cosmologist. What do you call it? A physical, I can't think of it. There's a word, you know it. It's like Neil deGrasse Tyson's title, but I can't come up with it right now. And he talked to us about computers, supercomputers, elements, and stars. It was all very interesting. That's the kind of thing we do down there at the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They meet at the Goins Administration Building and Cafeteria Annex. You can just go there on Sundays, first and third Sundays, or just follow the signs when you get there, or go to the website, rationalist.org, and click on the directions link. For those of you who are no longer believers but miss church, there's the Sunday Assembly, which started in England a couple of years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God, rational-only, science-only church setting for those who have had enough of religion but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering on Sunday mornings. They go to Google, put in Sunday Assembly Knoxville, and learn all about it. There's also a Humanists of East Tennessee, which is more like a singles group for humanists. Go to meetup.com, put in Humanists of East Tennessee, and they meet many times a month for dinners, hikes, swimmings, picnics, things like that, movies. So go to meetup.com and you can find the Humanists of East Tennessee. If you're a student, either in high school or college, there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or just find secular companionship in the Bible Belt. It can seem pretty lonely out there for a non-believer living in Tennessee, but check out the Secular Student Alliance, and if you don't have a chapter in your own school, start one. I'm going to play another song now. When we come back, we'll talk about... Well, I've got a special surprise, so hang around for a little bit, and we'll come back right after the song. Let's see. Let's try this one. And here we go.
Are you going to a dance?
No, Mom, it's just a movie date.
Oh. Your father and I have no objections to church or school-sponsored dances, but we surely don't want you going to any of those local places like that cuckoo club.
Everything will be alright.
Free thought rant for you. You've all been there. You get into the subject of religion with an atheist, and voila, you have a rant. This one comes from this week's Scathing Atheist podcast. You can find them at scathingatheist.com, unsurprisingly. This was about 5 minutes of their show this week. It's clean. I've scanned it. But if you plan to subscribe to their podcast, be aware that it contains a good bit of off-color language and sexual innuendo. That said, let's get started.
My niece lives in the middle of nowhere, 50 miles from the nearest city, with wide open fields in every direction. Now, if you're anything like me, you cannot hear that sentence without thinking about stargazing. So we finally got a chance to take the telescope out there this past weekend. Now, I'll admit it was a hard sell to get her and her husband to hang out with us in the cold until midnight, but neither of them had ever actually seen Jupiter through a telescope, and as soon as they did, it was not a hard sell to talk them into continuing to stand out there with us until 2 a.m. And the whole time we're talking about astronomy, of course, right? Neither of them know much about it, but they're inquisitive, they're smart, and I know enough to answer most of their questions in broad strokes at least. So we talked a bit about exoplanets, we talked about supermassive black holes, we talked about dark matter, and we almost talked about the Big Bang. But it was right there that my niece's husband, my nephew-in-law, I guess, shut me the f*** down. His curiosity disappeared faster than a pan of liquid water on Mars. All of a sudden, he didn't have any more questions. And what's more, he didn't want his wife to have any more questions either. Now, he wasn't rude, he wasn't mean, he just stopped asking questions. He stopped wanting to know because Jesus. Because we'd reached that critical point in the explanation of anything where it butts up against religion and challenges the mythology he's been taught to revere. And 24 years of indoctrination has taught him that at a certain point in any conversation about true stuff, he has to stick his fingers in his ears. Now think about that. Nobody saying a true thing would discourage you from learning about the untrue stuff that challenged it. When I meet people that believe the Bible is inerrant, or that homeopathy works, or that astrology has merit, I encourage them to learn about it. But of course, that's a luxury you can only afford when you're right, so religion tells them the exact opposite. They warn them that the devil's going to try to trick them with all this fancy stuff that's demonstrably true, but don't you fall for it now, or God will melt your flesh off and then he'll give you new flesh just so he can melt it off again. You know, if this was the only bad thing religion did, it would be too much. If all religion did was stifle curiosity and cure AIDS, it would be a net negative. Now, obviously, religion does the exact opposite of curing AIDS, see Catholicism, Africa, so I don't know that I can say that stifling curiosity is the worst thing religion does. That'd probably be justifying torture, rape, and murder, but it's the one thing they do that pisses me off the most often, is that effort to shut down minds. You know, I've told the story on this show before about how I became an atheist activist. I mean, you know, things like that obviously never boiled down to a single moment, but the most influential instance I can recall was seeing some Hasidic Jew on the subway berate his granddaughter for reading a book that was for boys only. And whenever I can't summon the kind of anger I need to get through a diatribe, I think about that. Or I peruse the latest revisions to the Texas textbook standards. Or even worse, I read the curriculum outlines on Christian homeschooling websites. We're talking about institutions, several national and multinational institutions that are proudly robbing children of the most precious thing they have, their potential. And even worse, they're robbing the future of all the intellectual contributions that those children might have made if they weren't taught that the cutting-edge science was just a plot by an immortal satyr to torture the ghost that lives in their brains. And as if that's not enough, consider that they're also robbing all of these people of a lifetime's worth of that amazing feeling when something shifts from not making sense to making sense. Nothing in the world feels better than that. At least nothing I've managed to talk my wife into yet. Learning is the quintessential human experience, and people are being robbed of it by the billions. whether it's by a zealot of a parent who won't send them to school, or a theocratic school board that censors their textbooks, or an oppressive government that forbids certain types of thinking, or an international effort to stop certain fields of scientific study in their tracks. Because their goal isn't just to keep their children stupid, or even your children. They want to keep humanity stupid, because smart is in direct conflict with God. And look, this is an intrinsic part of religion. There's no way to pull this part out and still have religion. They're in the business of selling answers. Wrong answers, to be precise. And when you're selling wrong answers, right answers are always going to be your biggest competitor. You'll notice that Christian leaders don't invest a lot of energy trying to keep their flocks from becoming Muslims. You don't see imams dedicating much effort to keep their followers from choosing Hinduism. They know that the other guy's bullshit is no better than theirs. But as soon as you start saying true shit, all the religious leaders can band together to denounce that. And like I said, I should be more pissed about the other shit. You know, the female genital mutilation, the murder of apostates, the acid attacks, the suicide bombings. But in so many ways, that stuff is just a byproduct of the forced ignorance thing. You know, they seclude their followers from any real education and then take advantage of their lack of education. They try to suffocate their curiosity exactly when it's at its most potent. Because if you look too far into any subject whatsoever, it'll start disproving God. That's how thin it is. Doesn't matter if it's biology, astronomy, geology, physics, logic, ethics, psychology, neurology, philosophy, history, archaeology, genetics, epistemology, comparative anything. Every one of them has a line you can't cross over without setting down your God. And of course, religious leaders know that once you've put God down, even if it's just for a minute, even if it's just to learn a little biology, you might realize that he's not worth the effort of bending over to pick back up.
And you can understand why I had to play that. It's a real calamity. Not only that, but it's been going on for thousands of years. Billions of people over thousands of years. Try to imagine the effect on the world. Imagine where we could be right now without that horrible effect. Okay, I'm going to take a break and play a song. It's The Unbroken Thread by the Symphony of Science.
Let's take a trip to examine this common basis of life, a voyage to investigate the molecular machinery at the heart of life on Earth.
All life is related, and it enables us to construct with confidence the complex tree that represents the history of life. Our planet, the Earth, is, as far as we know, unique in the universe. It contains life. Here, plants and animals proliferate in such numbers that we still have not even named all the different species. Darwin's great insight revolutionized the way in which we see the world. We now understand why there are so many different species.
Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells in us. It's a little universe. Those are some of the things that molecules do. Given 4 billion years of evolution, we are, each of us, a multitude.
Now, how did the molecules of life arise?
It began in the sea. Some 3,000 million years ago, complex chemical molecules began to clump together. These were the seeds from which the tree of life developed. They were able to split, replicating themselves as bacteria.
The secrets of evolution are time and death. There's an unbroken thread that stretches from those first cells to us. The secrets of evolution are time and death. There's an unbroken thread that stretches from those first cells to us. Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells. In us is a little universe. Those are some of the things that molecules do. Given 4 billion years of evolution, we are, each of us, a multitude.
Isn't a sharp line dividing humans from the rest of the animal kingdom? It's a very wuzzy line. It's a very wuzzy line. It's getting wuzzier all the time. we find animals doing things that we, in our arrogance, used to think was just human. It's a very worthy line, and it's getting worthier all the time.
Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells.
In us is a little universe.
Those are some of the things that molecules do.
Given 4 billion years of evolution,
we are, each of us, a multitude. Every cell is a triumph of natural selection, and we're made of trillions of cells.
In us is a little universe.
Our planet, the Earth, is, as far as we know, unique in the universe. It contains life.
Its continued survival now rests in our hands.
And that was Symphony of Science. They go on YouTube. They've got a whole bunch of songs that they've done like this on lots of different subjects. Go to YouTube and do a search for Symphony of Science. Before the music, we had a rant about the effects of religion and churches, and just and even religious thought on humans, people. But the church has another effect, more direct and more sinister, and this song is about that.
All dressed up like a Christmas tree, with velvet lace and gold, they took us to their sacred house, and we did what we were told. They filled up our heads with stories, and they told us that we could be saved if we sang and praised their hero. But he never showed his face. They warned us to watch out for Satan, who'd be waiting there to capture our soul. If we didn't heed all of their wishes, he would drag us all down through that hole. We'd burn and we'd scream there forever, and our cries, they would never be heard. Yes, the innocence of little children will accept the liar's word. Get down on your knees, dear Father, and beg now forgiveness for me. Show me that you're truly sorry for the person that I couldn't be. Show me some tears now of sorrow. Show me a face that is real. My innocent and lonely existence was never left there for you to steal. They take away all of your childhood. They'll rob you of all of your dreams. Their cruelty, it hurts and will leave you with scars that can never be seen. And we are all left here to suffer with the heartache of struggle and strife. And our tears, they'll never dry up. They follow us on through life. Get down on your knees, dear sister, and beg now forgiveness from me for the cruelty towards all those children and the pain that you'll never see. The mothers that lost all their babies and never would see them again. The cries from their beds still remain in their heads, and slowly it drives them insane.
with your souvenirs, your paintings, your gold, your chandeliers. Take all your sermons and all of your songs. You won't be back no more. Take your church and your holy shame, your evil deeds from where you came. Your candles have melted and no one cares. You won't be back no more. You won't be back no more. You won't be back no more.
That was Get Down on Your Knees, Dear Father. I can't really tell you who it's by. I've done searches on the internet, but I can't come up with a band name. Anyway, I mentioned before in the show that we have a TV show. The Atheists, Knoxville Atheists, have a TV show. It's on every Tuesday at, from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock. You can see it on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can just watch it on your computer by streaming it online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of these shows. We've probably got 5 years of archives on YouTube that some fan has been saving for us and putting them up there when he can. Just search for Knoxville Free Thought Forum, or the fan is named Finitist. That's close to Infinitist, I guess, but just look for Knoxville Free Thought Forum and you'll find it. Also, if you're interested in getting involved in the show, becoming a host or helping out with the show, come to any Ask Meetup or RET meeting, talk to us about it. Or you can go to rationalist.org or Knoxville Atheist Meetup and send us an email. That's knoxvilleatheist.org, I think, or com. I don't know. Try it. Just search for it in Google. You'll find it. We're going to have Shelley Siegel take us out tonight with her song called Eve. See you next week.
The Bible tells me I was made for and from man, and I must do for him everything that I can. I must surrender to his will, yeah, I must submit. I can't make the household decisions, 'cause I am unfit. It tells me my place with everlasting grace. The Bible tells me I must be silent again, hear my voice. My role has been divinely defined, and I have no other choice. I may not be a teacher of men, I must cover up my shame. These are the laws of the one who in vain I cannot name. He tells me my place with everlasting grace. Am I punishment for wanting to learn? It's a painful birth from which I may not return. Impure, you cannot touch me, and it has nothing to do with where I've been. It is part of who I am. It is because I corrupt men. I was asking for it just by being a woman. He tells me my place with everlasting grace. Am I punishment for what? Surrender to his will, yeah, I must submit. I can't make the household decisions, 'cause I am unfit. It tells me my place.